What I'm endlessly pointing to is something that cannot be discovered because it's not hidden. It's never never far enough away to discover. It's never in front of you, and it's never in the future. It's never out of reach. So we have a tendency to want to discover, attain something new, attain something more pure, more real. That movement of mind is also just part of this. Even those thoughts of seeking are undiscoverable. And in that, we're free, even in the thoughts of seeking, we're free in the momentary identity of the one that wants to find peace or freedom. We're free in doubt, even if a doubt is here or doubt arises as a thought or as a tendency to avoid in the moment. That doubt, that tendency to move away from, which is made possible only by a distortion in consciousness, is also freedom. We don't have to discover that. It simply comes upon us. So, the moment you recognize that you're suffering, you're free. Because that suffering is a thought, and that thought is freedom. And that sense of the I that's suffering is also a thought, and that thought is freedom. Because it's not attainable. It's not somewhere else. It's not 1 minute in front of you. It's not 1 millimeter away from you. So I point to what can't be pointed to, because it's all already there. It's the pointing. It's the sound. It's the movement. It's any sensation, just as it is. Free to be what it is, to feel dull, to feel stuck, to move freely, to dissipate and disappear and reappear as something else, as a image in the mind, to reappear as a sound, and to dissolve again. The freedom is freedom from any framework, any paradigm, any limitation, any boundary. The freedom is freedom from any denial of seeking, freedom from any denial of desire, aversion. When we don't make distance between desire and that which appears to be aware of it, then it's dissolved into boundless clarity. When we don't make distance between aversion and what appears to be aware of aversion, then the construct of separation in consciousness settles and dissolves. And what's left is not in time, not fixed in space. It doesn't know separation. It doesn't know self and other. it's absolutely free to be exactly what it is. Reveling in its own unknowability, unattainability. Thought forms, concepts fall away. They're like ice thrown into the fire. They cause no problems, they cause no trouble, but there's nothing left to hold on to those. There's nothing left to clean. Just what is. Even distortions of mind cause no trouble. They just seem like distortions from the point of view of the one that recognizes distortion. But that one is also part of that fluctuation in consciousness. The one aware of and the distortion are the peak and trough of the same wave. All waves in consciousness, self and other, here and there, before and after, enlightened and not enlightened. All those waveforms are riding the carrier wave of reality. Carrier wave of reality is so immediate. The only way we can know it is by being it. Being the impossible intimacy of infinite contact. Being the impossible flexibility of dissolution. Vivid phenomenon imbibed with awareness and dissolving, morphing, fluctuating all the time. The relief from seeking is seeing, seeing clearly, feeling by being the truth that there's nothing to seek, nothing apart, no object. Experience doesn't exist on its own side. The thought system can never get this. It can never grasp or understand it. But it doesn't mean it won't try. And even trying is adding volition to something that doesn't really have volition. It simply takes snapshots. The reflective mind takes snapshots, but it can never take a picture of reality. Because reality is never fixed. It's never one thing in one way. It doesn't lend itself to paradigms at all. So you can neither apprehend it, nor can you escape from it. There's nothing to be apart from, and there's no one to be apart. Sound, sound is never fixated, never fixates. There's not a subject in sound, in this sound right here, the sound of the air conditioner. There's no subject there, nothing aware of. There's just sound awareness. One thing, one non-thing. It doesn't have, it's not an object. There's no subject to make that an object. It's just what it is. Just that sound. There's no one to make a conclusion about it. There's no one to call it luminous or radiant. It is luminosity. If we drive a wedge of thought into that, that just distracts attention into thought. But the luminous nature of sound doesn't go anywhere. It's never apart from the sensations in the body. The body hears. But not as a subject, and sound is not an object. The hearing is intrinsic to sensation, physical sensation. And physical sensation is intrinsic to hearing. Body sound awareness can never be pulled apart. The sense of apartness created by the thought system is itself only one thought. And that thought is non-dual consciousness. Consciousness without an object of binding, without an object of perception. Pure consciousness reflecting only itself. Because it has no object to reflect. Reality is not an object. It's not fixed in time or space, so there's no snapshot that consciousness can take. So consciousness can now relax into a pure knowing of itself, consciousness of consciousness, infinite reflection, inward, outward. It's somewhat like an ocean of pure awakeness, pure being. Pure sense of I space, maybe. It feels different to different people, but it's unbound. It's non-avoidant. It doesn't try to make an object. of anything. It fluctuates and flows, morphs, shifts, changes, but it has no edge. All beliefs, no matter how subtle, are this consciousness. No belief tarnishes consciousness at all. So we learn non-dual through consciousness, or we can learn the flavor of it. It's still reflective, it's still the thought gate, but it can achieve a non-dual conformation where there's no subject-object. It's a pure, infinite depth of being, awakeness, aliveness. And this teaches us non-dual. When we move attention, our attention moves to the senses now, to a sound, the non-dual nature can be appreciated. Although with the sense gates, it's more subtle, I would say, at first. It's the mind and thought system can make things feel concrete, real, solid, continuous. You won't find any of those qualities in the non-dual senses. So because of habituation and paying too much attention to thoughts, we disregard the non-dual nature of the senses. It kind of registers as not important to the thoughts, to the mind, to the value system of the mind. So that's why if we practice settling the mind, settling consciousness through meditation or self-inquiry, we begin to intuit what non-dual is. And then when we investigate the senses, hearing is only sound. Or sound hears, or just sound, with our attention permeating the sound, allowing the sound to overtake the experience. We start to appreciate the subtle, the there's no word for it, but it's sublime, it's powerful, it's ancient nature, this non-dual nature. It's not, notably not continuous, not solid, not graspable, not identifiable. So it's not like of the value systems of the mind. And yet it shines forth with a certain invisible radiance. It's like tuning into no channel. Hearing without ears. We hear with ears all the time. That's our mind's version of it. We're sure we know who we are, and we know what we're hearing. We know the label for it, and we know our relationship to it. That's the usual way, and that's fine. This is when you ask the question, well, what hears that sound without ears? What if that which is apprehending the sound is nothing I ever thought it was? Nothing I learned about. Because it's in the sound. When we hear sound that way, then sound hears itself. And we start to appreciate the non-dual nature, the not subject-object nature. Without a subject-object conformation plastered over it, without a thought plastered over the top of it, we see that the paradigm of separation is only a thought. And in sound, or any other sense. We can't find boundary. We can't find a beginning and end or an edge, because only a thought can do that. Only a thought can suggest that. It's kind of the way reality looks in our mind, but it's not the way reality actually is. Because reality doesn't look like anything. It doesn't sound like anything. Reality is the sound. It's not coming from somewhere. It's not going anywhere. It doesn't emerge from anything. It has no source. It has no meaning. It has no purpose in the ways we think about things. It's not anchored by any of that. It's not weighed down by any of that mind stuff. This is very simple to practice. I'm aware that that our minds will try to make it into something challenging, but it's not challenging at all, actually. It's always there. So if you have some faith in that or some trust in that, then the practice becomes very simple in a moment-to-moment practice, in a walking through life situation, whatever you're doing, whether you're driving, talking to somebody, eating, then recognize. You can even ask, where's attention right now? Where's attention drawn most directly right now? And it might be into a thought, and that's fine. We can affirm, in thinking, there's only thought, or just one thought. Like, I want to move my attention right into that thought. If you walk up to one of the old-fashioned TV screens, and you get so close, it turns pixelated. And then it's just not even the same thing anymore, right? You see if red, green, and blue dots, that's not what the image looked like when you were far away from it. The thought is the same way. We have to hold a certain subject-object confirmation inside of consciousness to feel like we're navigating a world of thought, which we impose upon what we consider the actual world. So just get closer, closer, closer. Right to one thought, whatever it is. It doesn't matter what it is. It can be, I feel like I'm dying, existential crisis, whatever. So if I feel like I'm dying, I can see that's a thought. It's not a sensation. It's not something I can feel on the surface of something else. It's not a sound in the air that's seeming to propagate through the air. It's something being experienced for sure, but where is it? So you can just investigate that directly, get closer, closer, closer. And then be open, be aware of what might occur next, because another thought could occur and say, this doesn't work, or I can't find that thought. Well, now our attention is turning towards that next thought directly. We go right into it as close as you can, get close, 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 close. And then just be open, be receptive, and something might catch your attention, like that sound over there in the whatever, something outside. So now our attention can move directly into that sound, and we can affirm or recognize only sound hearing. And just let that be our meeting place with the sound. Like, once you've affirmed that only sound or sound hears, you've done your part. That's the approach on your end, let's say. Now just let the sound show you what it is. Surrender there. Just stop. Let the sound do whatever it does. It might get louder. It might get more interesting somehow or salient. It might, you might suddenly hear the buzzing in the ears again that we filter all the time. It might feel like it's everywhere. But there's no rules to how this happens. That's the key. Again, once you've sort of affirmed and made the commitment or intention, let's say, to just allow your attention to flow into that sound, then you've done your part. That's it. This is the balance you're learning. It's a dance. You're learning the dance of reality. The sense of the one whose attention is moving or being moved. It meets that sound exactly. Now, this isn't subject object in a mental sense. This feels very tactile. It feels like something, feels a contact. And it's not something you think about. It's like, I guess, like Vipassana or whatever. It's direct. But once it's kind of like I call here and it calls back. It's an exchange in a way. So you let that call on your side, let's say. You just let it just call into the unknowable, the unknowability of sound. And then now it's sound's turn. And just let it be what it is. Don't add, subtract, grasp, try to find enlightenment in it. Don't worry about any of that stuff. That's all mind stuff. Just sound. Don't push. Don't pull. You might notice your receptivity just opened more. Then whatever comes next might be sensation in the feet, in the gut. Doesn't matter. And in the same way, we notice sensation feels. Or only sensation here. And just let the attention flow in. Let the sound do the work now. Or the sensation, excuse me. Very simple, very gentle, very innocent. It's empirical. Don't assume anything ever again from now on, because you'll always be wrong. You don't need a book. You don't need a teacher. You don't need a mantra. That sound is the Sat Guru. That sensation is the Sat Guru. You'll never get a better teaching, literally, ever. You won't find a better technique, inquiry, than just that radiant sound, that luminous sensation. And a certain willingness to just dissolve in and as that sound. Hold no view, hold no frame of reference. So where does attention go next? Wherever it wants to. It's like a balloon, a buoyant balloon popping around in the air. There's no need for experience to be any certain way here. That's freedom. I'm suffering, I'm not suffering. Thoughts, both thoughts. This feels good, this feels bad. Just thoughts. We're not modulating our experience. We're not controlling our experience. So, true rest True rest is not lazy, it's not sleepy, although it can be either of those, it's fine, but it's a little bit alert, a little bit interested, a little bit, it's very receptive, and that's it. It doesn't have momentum, doesn't have, it didn't come from the past, it didn't come from 5 minutes ago. It's being born again and again and again, here, here, here. Light, it's very light. Doesn't have, doesn't hold anything, doesn't hold on to anything. Nothing holds on to anything because nothing's apart from anything. So there's no doubt, no distance, no need for correction. What's more fluid than fluidity? What's closer than close? What's so infinite in potential that it can even be finite easily? It can be finite and infinite at the same time, no problem. It can be here and there at the same time, no problem. It can feel like a self, that's not a problem. When we practice in this way, sound, hearing, sensation, feeling, if we do this in a very direct way, and do it ongoing, make a true practice out of it, the luminous nature, the radiant nature, the wonder of it can get turned up like incredibly high, actually. It's not a goal necessarily, but it can. And that it can feel just beyond what you would have ever expected as far as clarity and radiance and innocence. But with that, it's important to always be willing to continue to let go, even of that as an experience. Because it's, you could say that's so enjoyable that there's going to be some little remnant of self that wants to keep it, wants to own it. But this, there's nothing about ownership here. There's not enough distance to own anything. There's no owner. There's no apartness. There's no watcher. There's no one noting. So that's always a thought when that occurs. But the solution for that is to keep that innocent fascination and alertness that naturally aligns and harmonizes with that radiance, with the luminous nature, with the non-dual nature of experience. You're not undoing that. You're not trying to turn away from that. It stays. That aspect, it can stay just as luminous, and also we have to remember to bring in or recognize the dissolution, the aspect that is also not there at all. This is that thing that's like the ultimate paradox to the thought. It doesn't make any sense in thought, but in natural reality or in direct experience, it can become very, very obvious. And that is that as radiant and as bright as non-dual experience is, it's also unlocatable. It's unfindable. It has no essential nature. You can go closer to the closeness even and find that in the closeness, fully immersed in that luminous nature to the point where there's no watcher left, then there's also nothing. It's important to balance that. So in the sound, there's only sound, vivid, non-dual, not apart. Sound is here and there at the same time, or there's just one place, but it's not even a place, and that place is sound. So there's that aspect, that non-dual luminous aspect, and also there's what's not there at all, the sound of no sounds. And recognizing that those seemingly impossibly diametrically opposed realities are exactly the same thing. Again, it's even another measure of subtlety in this. But that's where the freedom from a watcher state is cultivated. It's not something you can understand, so you'll never understand. No one can understand this. It's not understandable, but you can sense it. You can sense into it, and again, like, remind yourself on occasion when you're lost in the wonder of luminous nature that fills up the universe, that there's also essentially there's nothing essential. There's no essence to it. It has to do with its non-fixed nature, its dissolving nature, you could say, maybe. It's integration, disintegration as one. And it's actually another degree of freedom from having to have anything a certain way ever, from ever having to have a self impose itself on reality, a seeming self. Freedom from having to form having a relational nature with anything, life, experience, sensation, other people, myself, my emotions, my practice, my realization process. There's a freedom from having any relational fixation on any of it. All that stuff's fine. It's not like it goes away. It doesn't, you know, in the conventional sense, life is just what it is. It's fine. But the hindrance, the feeling of hindrance or doubt or holding back from, at the most fundamental level, can also dissolve into that luminous nature. And then it's luminous emptiness, luminous nothingness, non-arising, not in time, not locatable, but not never apart either. And again, to reiterate, I say it all the time, but it's not something you'll get. So don't hold yourself to some standard of like, oh, sometime I'm going to understand that. You'll never understand it. But you can certainly let it come forward and replace you. You can let it come forward and experience more and more and more, for sure. Find it everywhere. When you're laying on your bed and you turn and you see the edge of the pillow, it's right there. When you flush the toilet and your hand touches the cold toilet knob, it's there, it's right there. It's that contact. It's calling to you all the time, all the time, all the time. And we hear the call in the sounds and the moments, but we go, no, I don't want to think about that. I want to think about enlightenment. I want to think about how do I get to the next level. That's what's important. Yeah. So, so much of this is just about receptivity to your environment. Give yourself permission to stop managing everything. Trust the body. It knows what to do. Trust yourself not to know anything about spirituality, awakening, life, yourself. You can know about how to do your job and make a recipe or ride your bike, all that, whatever. That's all fine. That's knowledge. That's relative knowledge. But there's no knowledge about this. There's knowledge about what seems like this, but it's seeking. It's the mind is still trying to seek something. It turns what is into what is not, and then seeks it. I love what Paul Hederman always says. He's like, I'd make a great therapist. Someone would sit down and start talking, and I'd say, that's not happening. That's not happening. That's not happening either. Nope, that's not happening. Which, anything you think about is really not happening, really. A thought is fine. It's used for communication and to, you know, work as a group of people on a project, or can be used in creative ways and poetic ways and for practical communication. All that's fine. But language thought, when turned inward, to try to understand, see, find reality, it just never can do that. It can't. It'll spin on itself. And that's fine. Like, we don't have to, again, we don't make distance from that. When we see it, we recognize it, give it its due, show it what it is. It's thought. Let that thought be consciousness. Every thought loves to just relax into consciousness. It's like jumping into a hot tub or let the thought take a vacation. Let that belief, conceptual framework, identity, which are all in thought, let them just go on vacation in consciousness. That's all they want. They just want to rest. That's what ego structures want, to rest. They want to feel better. Give yourself permission to live without a narrative, without a story, without a past or a future. If you just try it, I mean, it's pretty amazing what can happen. And I'll say one other thing about this luminous nature, this non-dual nature of the sense phenomena. It's what I find everybody really wants, but they're looking for it in surrogates. They're looking for it in safety. They're looking for it in novelty. They're looking for it in friends. They're looking for it in lovers. They're looking for it in sex. Some people are looking for it in the next hit of whatever, the next shot, next drink. We look for it in paradigm shifts and new ways of thinking and seeing reality. And any of those things, any of those movements, because they're all Buddha nature, they're all reality. Any of those can give us a little taste of it. But because of the nature of those types of activity, the seeking activities, let's say. At the same time as they give us a little taste, they propagate a certain identity, and that's the identity of the seeker, which is also hiding. So it's like hide and seek, hide and seek, hide and seek. So that's why this coming back to the sense as it is now, without having to modify experience through anything, through alcohol, drugs, through medications, through anything. Coming back to that which is immediately available is absolutely necessary to find what you want, because there's magic in the synchronicity of the moment. All those other types of seeking are always in, they always have something about time in them. The seeking mechanism of mind, the sweetness, as we were talking about yesterday, is in the lie. It's in the lie that, oh, I'll get to it there. It'll be there. It'll be in that next hit or the one after that. It'll be in that next relationship. That seeking mechanism, which is tied into identity and reinforces identity, also has this component of hiding. And what we're hiding from is we're hiding from the barriers that often come into full view or come into consciousness when we decide to stop seeking, when we decide that, okay, I've chased that thing and gotten it and chased it and gotten it, and I'm never completely satisfied. I can see now that it's kind of a fool's game, whatever that thing is. So then we stop. When we stop seeking, we also stop hiding. And when we stop hiding, the barriers come, you know, into our immediate experience, and those barriers are emotional in nature. So things like fear, shame, helplessness, sadness. Everybody's different. Some people repress some emotions, but they're totally happy with other ones. And some people repress everything. and there's all these various levels of repression. But as long as there's seeking in the mind going on, there's something being repressed. There's something being avoided. So when we stop seeking, we also stop hiding. And very quickly, the emotional, let's say, barriers. And I call them barriers not to make the emotions sound like a problem, because they're not. But our avoidance patterns in reference to those emotions are what is the nature of the barrier that makes what's completely obviously always the case, which is non-dual experience, seem like something it's not. It seems hidden, obscured, or completely forgotten about, actually, most of the time. So when we come in contact with these, which can feel sometimes like demons. I mean, they can feel very, clearly they're going to feel very uncomfortable a lot of the time. Understand that that is an intelligent movement. It's necessary. It's what, it's the only way, actually. I'm still surprised how often I talk to people who have a lot of spiritual background, and then I start working with them, and they start going through these intense emotions, and they'll still say, is it really like this for a lot of people? They don't believe it. They don't think, and I'm like, it's every person I've worked with that has woken up has gone through it, gone through a lot of intense emotions, men and women both. So I don't know why not everybody talks about it who has gone through these things, but I don't know a way around it, and I wouldn't recommend it if there was, probably. So just know that it's just part of the deal. And it's good, it's lawful that happens. We have to see the barriers. We have to see our resistance patterns. And ultimately see that the emotion itself is totally fine, no matter what it is, when we can experience that emotion in a non-dual way, in a non-judgmental way. We can experience the emotion from itself. When fear can feel fear fully, ironically and paradoxically, that's when fear stops. That's the end of fear is full embodiment of fear. The end of anger is the full embodiment of anger. I don't mean acting out in unhealthy or unkind ways on anger. I mean to just fully feel it, fully experience it. Let it physiologically move through the body. If we want to live without suffering, we have to learn to live with suffering fully. And then that, then the gates are open, the portals are open to the experience of non-dual. And we see, wow, it really is always like this. But the emotions and the resistance patterns and the challenges will come at their own pace. That's not, I can't tell you it'll last this long and stop, or, you know, this will be the emotion you're going to feel and then that one. And it's just a little different for everyone. And they can come faster than you want them to sometimes. Sometimes you'll feel blocked and they're not really coming, but you know there's something blocked there. In those cases, you can ask, what am I feeling? What am I not feeling? What am I not wanting to feel? If we feel emotionally blocked or stuck, those can be helpful. And then whatever it is, just be willing to feel it as close as you can, as close to the sensation in the body as you can. And over time, the resistance patterns soften more and more. And then the experience of the emotion incorporates into our seamless experience. And then it stops being what we used to think it was. Any emotion that we used to think was negative or a bad emotion, any of that, when the barriers are gone, when we're able to feel the emotion fully as what it is, to, you could say, honor that emotion for the life force that it is, all of a sudden it's something very different than we thought it was. It's actually very enjoyable. It feels like a natural process. It feels like a cycle in nature. It feels like a seasonal shift or a storm or a weather pattern. But in that, there's interconnection. You can feel your environment too. It's not just in the body. So even going through those challenging movements with emotion lead to a different place, a surprising place. So be willing to go through all of that as well, of course, because it can't really be avoided in this process. Okay, that's everything I've got to say for the moment.